When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan. And Starkville, Mississippi, I got something for you. You know him well. He plays Ricks on a fairly regular basis. As many people know, Ricks is one of those places in Mississippi that to play there means one or two things. You know somebody, or you're on your way. And I think Caleb Shirley here might be somebody who is well on his way. So Caleb Shirley,
a few people too, man.
Caleb Shirley, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you on, my friend. I've been following. We have a lot of mutual friends, and man, it's good to have you on.
I'm excited, man. First ever podcast ever.
I'm popping a cherry here.
I reckon.
But I want to know your story, man. So tell me a little bit about where you're from. Tell me about growing up.
Grew up just outside of Birmingham, Alabama, in a place called Pleasant Grove. Then moved to Gardendale, Alabama when I was in high school. I've always sang since I sang at church for the first time when I was 4 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. Singing with my mama there holding the microphone. But how I got started doing country and all that stuff was still playing in church, but it was one Christmas, I think I was 14 years old, and there was a big bag underneath the tree. I'm like, what is in that bag? What does my dad have planned? I thought it was like something to do with the Xbox or something. It was way too big, but that was 14-year-old saying, I want something for my Xbox. Mm-hmm. So Christmas comes, and I open it up, and it's a guitar. And I remember looking at my dad, and I said, what do you want me to do with this?
And, play it?
He's like, well, you're going to play it, ain't you? I said, I guess. So looked up some YouTube lessons and stuff, had a guy come and show me how to put some chords together, and then I learned the rest.
Man, Gardendale. Man, Birmingham and that whole area is very near and dear to my heart. Some of my favorite music comes out of that area. So what were you listening to? Like you mentioned growing up in church and country, so like early influences.
My dad's a big Merle Haggard fan. He rubbed off on me on that. I think he's my all-time favorite. A lot of old country. And then my mom would have like 90s and 2000s playing in the car. And then once I started playing guitar, I started getting more into rock. I used to think that stuff wasn't cool when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, man, this AC/DC thing's actually kind of kicking. I like this. And started learning their riffs, and that's how I really like started to develop my sound.
Yeah,
because I'm not too country and I'm not too rock. I'm somewhere in the middle.
You are,
but I like how the rock feels. It's a lot more fun to play than just standing there with a guitar playing.
I think that's an interesting place where we are now, and there's quite a few people who delve into it. But I'm glad like we're getting more of a rock and country blend. Yep. Like, you know, Days Gone By with, like, your Merle Haggards, I would say that would be, like, a blues country blend.
Yeah.
And now it's
that's where it comes from.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it all comes from, right? Literally. Where we're sitting in Mississippi.
Literally.
So, yeah, man. That's, like, as you were learning the guitar and all that, would you consider yourself, like, more driven toward lead riffs or rhythm or, like...
Definitely more rhythm. I know like the minor pentatonic scale. Yeah. Like I can play lead if it's like two chords and I'm fine.
Yeah.
But I can BS something, but I'm definitely more a rhythm guy. I've wanted to play lead when I first started. Then I was like, this crap's kind of hard. I'm just going to stick to what I know.
that's kind of how I was, man. And like with the open mic that I host at Munson's now, and like just some of the guys that come out there, they've really inspired me to like, and they're deadheads, and I mean they're into a lot of different genres, and a lot of times they'll get up on stage and play, and I was like, I could probably get up there and sing with them. I could probably play rhythm, but yeah. Like, I'd like to get up there and rip it one time.
I wish I could.
Yeah.
If I could, I wouldn't have as hard a time finding guitarists. I got to find someone that's good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I play rhythm for my band all the time. It's not as good as somebody else would be doing it, because it's difficult to play some of these songs and sing it at the same time.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm decent at rhythm. I don't claim to be a lead player whatsoever.
Right on. Well, Caleb Love, like, as you were coming up in high school, man, you had this guitar in your hand. Like, what about other interests? Would you play sports or?
I played basketball for a little while. I mean, I played the dime a dozen sports growing up that every kid plays.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like to play basketball until I got a bad knee. But that's a meme of my friends, is my bad knee. Can't do anything, but. Basketball was my sport there for a while. Really enjoyed playing basketball. I wasn't no good, but I could shoot and play defense.
Yeah. What about like your transition as far as taking it outside the church house? And tell me about when you felt like you could finally play out for the first time. What was that like? How'd that set up?
I still feel the nerves from the first time I played in the bar, man. Because like my dad for sure is like, why are you playing bars? Like, you don't need to be playing bars. I'm like, well, I can't start out playing Madison Square Garden. I gotta, like, everyone you hear nowadays has played bars for most of their careers. But my freshman year at State, I met some guys that play guitar. I met a bass player, and we started a little band called Stone Boulevard, named after the road that runs through campus. And we weren't very good, but we had a lot of passion. And so we played, I remember it was right when COVID hit, we played our first gig, I think it was upstairs at Hobie's, I think that's where it was.
That's a first time for a lot of folks.
And so I was expecting people just to sit there and listen. Like, I don't know why I expected that, it's a bar, but I mean, I was 18, so, mm-hmm. And they kept talking, I'm like, I'm playing here. Why are you guys not listening? Yeah,
shut up.
But, we started getting applause and stuff, and people started coming up and dancing and throwing dollar bills in our little tip bucket. And I was like, this is something I could get used to.
Like, what songs were y'all playing?
Oh, Lord. I think the only video I have from that whole gig is us playing Drinking Problem by Midland. I think that's the only video I have. But I remember playing Dixieland a lot,
mm-hmm.
and growing up in Alabama as an Alabama fan, I didn't know.
Row Tide, brother.
Yeah. I didn't know Mississippi State had their version of.
I'm not aware of this either.
Oh, it's. I mean, it's the same. They say Hail State instead of Roll Tide.
Okay.
And then they say F Auburn, LSU, and Ole Miss too. And I'm like, I've never heard this before. I've been going to Alabama games for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my first real crowd interaction of people doing that. And I don't play that song anymore, but yeah. I got addicted to it at that point. It was something I wanted to do.
Yeah. As far as, like, when y'all were building the band and, like, building up that set and, like, from Stone Boulevard to Hobie's, like, I'm guessing that you fronted it. So, like, was this something that y'all all came together, like, with the set list and y'all were all building it together, or were you fronting that up?
I fronted a lot of it. I wasn't the only singer in the band. We had another guy named Hayden that sang. And I sang harmony on some stuff. And Nate Moore plays at Munson sometimes.
Yeah.
He was the bass player. And, you know, he can sing too, man. And so he sang a few songs. I sang most of them. But it was all country. I don't think we played old-time rock and roll. I think that was the only time we
little Bob Seger
branched into something else. And so, but that, I mean, that didn't, that gig lasted like 5 months. And then we were done with it.
Yeah.
So.
So, what was 5 months of doing that, and obviously something got into you.
Well, it wasn't me. So we had played – we were Rick's first show when he had live music again after COVID, and we were outside, and it was like
– would that be like at the
– at the Tiki Bar.
Yeah, the Tiki Bar, yeah.
We're outside, and it's like 45 degrees outside. I mean, we're playing, and my hand is purple because it's so daggum cold. And not many people were there. Like, my mom came and a couple other guys, folks, and maybe like five or six stragglers and nobody else. And so it kind of put a damper on some of the guys' parade that not every show is going to be a good show. And then, I mean, I'm sure, you know, as a musician, there's nothing more demoralizing than playing to an empty room.
Yeah.
Like, that is the worst feeling in the world.
But it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to happen more than once.
Oh, it's happened way more than once.
More times than not, but, you know.
So we actually played one more show at Hobie's when he still had the downstairs. I don't think he has it anymore. I think it's State Theater it now is. Or something.
You know what's crazy about State Theater?
What?
I graduated high school in 2009, and this would have been probably about 2010, 2011. And me and all the boys I ran with, we were huge cross-Canadian ragweed fans.
Oh, yeah.
And they were playing State Theater.
Really?
And we were a little degenerate.
Yeah.
And at that time, and some would say that it's still this way today, but Starkville didn't play when it came, like, you don't drink and drive, and you better not have that that grass that smells like a skunk.
That urban skunk, some might say,
Yeah. And I remember we had a little bit of that urban skunk, and we were coming in, and, like, it was early. Like, the sun was going down, and there were already roadblocks. And I was like, good grief. And so we threw everything we had out. And I remember it was just elbow to elbow in that little theater and seeing cross-Canadian ragweed. And we got to hang out with them in the back parking lot after.
Oh, yeah.
And I was
like, I would have loved to have seen them.
Man, this is incredible. And, man, that was one of the first and only times that I would hang out in Starkville, because we grew up in Kennedy, Alabama,
okay,
which is just across the state line from Columbus.
Yeah.
But we would either hang out in Columbus, but we would go see shows and everything in Tuscaloosa. We didn't really go anywhere else.
Yeah.
And if it was a bigger show, Birmingham. And, we were kind of excited about Starkville. It was like, well, it's kind of the same distance from home as Tuscaloosa. And that really burned us, like, seeing those roadblocks in and out.
Oh, dude, I went through one on a Tuesday night one time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they – I guess they were looking for somebody.
Yeah. Oftentimes, but, I think they are. Yeah.
I didn't think it was a DUI. They didn't try to make me blow or anything, but they asked me for my ID and stuff. I'm like, man, it's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday. What are y'all doing?
Yeah.
I called my dad. He's been a police officer for 30 years. I was like, what is it? Why are they doing this? He said, they're looking for somebody. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
The College Town DUI checkpoint on a Tuesday night.
It's kind of wild. But yeah. So State Theater downstairs, Hobie's.
Yeah.
Back to your story.
It was Hobie's, I guess.
Yeah.
But we played there, and it actually was a good crowd. Like, not the most I've ever seen in there, but it was, like, good for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that was my first time ever giving a girl a pick. That was on the front row.
Oh, man.
I was like, this is what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And, but we did that when I went home and went to work after the school year was over. And Rick texted me. He said, hey, I got the big stage this date. I want y'all to try it out. I said, okay. Texted the band group chat that we had, and I was like, hey, Rick wants this on the big stage. I was all excited. And I remember,
have you ever been behind Rick's?
Oh, yeah.
To see who's played the big stage. And, like, for those of you who don't know, that there's, like, graffiti on the back of Rick's.
Anybody who's anybody right now has played at Rick's Cafe.
That's right.
At least in country music.
I mean, that's how I opened the show, like telling people, is, like, Rick's is kind of a deal for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, one of the guitarists was like...
Reclay Strays recently played it.
Yeah, and they're good, man.
Oh, they're great.
Treaty Oak Revival. I love Treaty Oak. But one of the guitarists goes, man, I'm not going to do it. I'm like, why? And so the others started following suit. I was like, well, screw this. I'm going to get my own band. And so I texted Isaiah Perkins.
Shout out, baby.
I said, a good friend of mine. I said, hey, I knew he'd play guitar. I said, I need a bassist, a drummer, and a place to stay on this date. He said, all right, I got you. And so leading up to it, I mean, it's a summer gig in a college town. You're not going to sell it
Everybody's
out.
Everybody's out of town.
Not going to sell it out. But we went and got ready to play it. I mean, I was showing people everything. Like, Morgan Wallen's played here, man. Like, I'm on the come up, like, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there was people there. Funny enough, my ex-girlfriend was there, and she was my ex at the time. She just texted me. She's like, hey, send me your ticket link. I'm going to drive down. I was like, you're going to what?
I don't know about that. Okay.
But, funny part about that. I used to have this song that I wrote that I played all the time. It's called I'd Miss Me Too. It's about your ex calling you and saying she'd miss you. And he said, well, heck, I'd miss me too, you know? And so I was playing that. And my mom is sitting with her mom. Oh. And my mom looks at her mom and goes, hey, you know this is about her, right? But, I mean, we played that. So at least I can say if I never go anywhere, my first ever show under my own name was at Rick's Cafe on the big stage.
Very cool, man. While we're talking about songwriting, then we'll get back to the game. When did you write your first song?
Oh, man. First song on guitar, I remember writing like a worship song when I was like 7. Quote-unquote worship song.
Sure.
Like, I didn't know how to play anything.
Yeah.
But the first song I wrote on guitar, I think I was 15. And I don't remember anything about it except the fact that Down in Birmingham, the song that I released, it was the same riff as that in a different key. And so that's the only thing I remember about it. Down in Birmingham's in A, I wrote the song in E, but it was the same power chords, just string up. And I thought I was, first song I ever wrote, I thought I was the stuff, man.
Oh, don't we all, man.
And I was sending it to all my buddies, like, hey, man, what do you think of this? And then I got older and started writing better songs. Like, man, this thing sucks. Let me write something else to it.
Yeah, I remember first song I wrote, man, it was called Fracture Light and Discolored, and it was about a ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, it was fresh off the breakup, and I just felt so empowered by it.
And I think mine was about it.
I called my best friend, come over to the house, man, I want you to hold the camera, and I'm going to put this up on YouTube, and I just want her to see it, you know. Just how
I understand
just
that.
just how I feel about it all, right? And we did all that, and that was another thing about like the group of guys that I was running with in high school. I picked up a guitar. I quit playing baseball to play guitar, and that was because of the guys I was running with at the time. Like one of my best friends, man, like he played "Proud Mary" by CCR at the school talent show, and I was like. I went home that night and I told my grandma, I was like, I gotta play guitar. And so we were all playing guitar. Some of us were skateboarding, some of us were gamers, some of us were ball players. But the one thing that we all had in common was like we were playing.
Yep.
And they were all way better than me.
That's how I feel anytime I hire a guitarist.
And so like the one thing I was like, I can set myself apart from these guys. I'll be a songwriter because they don't write songs.
There you go.
And that's what I did. Like from that first song I wrote, like I just used that. I kept going, and you know they're still incredibly talented, and like they'll get called up for gigs, you know, to play every now and then. But I got my own show.
Yeah,
I got my own music. And so, man, like, I mean, what do you make of that? Like, do you kind of see that in yourself as far as like your songwriting and like the way that you've been approaching the music over the years, or like what drives you?
A big thing that I think would set me apart is because I don't really do co-writes at all. Like everybody, all my friends in Nashville co-writing all the time, and I'm like, I mean, I'd say a good 90% of the songs you hear all the time that are country were written by somebody else and who sings them.
Absolutely.
at least 90%. And every song I've ever released or thought about recording has been 100% written by me. And I take a lot of pride in that because, I mean, my songs ain't the best, but I'm writing them myself. Like, they had my stamp on them, nobody else's.
Well, yeah. How did Nashville open itself up to you? How did that begin?
I could make good buddies with Mr. Paxton P. from down here. When he moved to Nashville. And I don't remember. I met another guy named Walker Wilson. He was just on The Voice last season.
Mm-hmm.
And made good friends with him. So him and Paxton are my two buddies in Nashville mainly. And one day Walker called me and said, "Hey, I got a writer's round I want us to play." And I'd never even been to downtown Nashville ever.
Were you down on Broadway?
It was at, where was it? I think it was called The Local.
Okay.
Which is like Music Row-ish, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I go in there.
What was your headspace like?
Oh, I was terrified, man. I was crapping my britches.
Like, this guy from outside of Birmingham that's going to school in the state is up in Nashville now, just off Music Row.
I was definitely the youngest dude in there. I don't even know if I was 21 yet. I might have been 20.
Yeah, he's just barely able to get in.
I get in there, and I think we went second or third in the round, and I was listening to the people before, so I'm like, man, my songs ain't even half as good. My songs suck compared to these people. But, I mean, I got up there and I played, and I got some good feedback from people. I met a lot of people, and then kept meeting people and started playing a little bit more rounds up there.
Well, they must have saw something.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what they see.
It remains to be seen, huh?
But, I mean, I'll say it first. I hate Nashville.
Okay.
If Nashville has zero haters left, I'm dead. Like, I hate going up there. I hate the traffic mainly. But once you get in the city, at least around the other people trying to do music, it's pretty fun. But
yeah.
You don't ever gonna see me on Broadway again, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, the parking's stupid.
Oh, my gosh. We went there. And Paxton was like, "Man, we're going to take you to Broadway. You ain't ever been." So we rode to Broadway. I was up there to record. So we went to Broadway, and we get in there, and I went up to the lady. I was like, "Hey, can I get a Miller Lite?" And she said, "Okay." I hand her my card. She hands it back. I was like, $12 for a 12-ounce. I said, "That's $1 an ounce." Like,
mm-hmm. Enjoy.
Yeah, I guess.
You better put your pinky out.
It's going to take me $100 to get a buzz.
Yeah. At this point,
I can't do it. But I don't hate Nashville itself, but getting there,
yeah,
and the community of it now, it's all, I mean, it's like a new New York. It's New York of the South.
Yeah, I mean, it truly is. We went up to Nashville, me and Ryan Munson, and back in the Apothecary days where we would work all these music festivals, we got invited up to the Tomato Fest.
Oh, yeah?
in East Nashville.
Tomato
Fest. And they have a tomato queen. And it's a big ordeal and all this and that. And we stayed with some friends of Ryan's just outside of East Nashville. And that was my second time there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I thought about Nashville, it was honky-tonk. I just thought country. But what was happening in East Nashville wasn't country at all.
Oh, no.
It was being gentrified. It was being, like, brought up in all these, like, bars. It was very indie music, punk. And you had all these kind of different genres. And so, like, the first night that we got in, we just drove up to be there, and we went out a little bit. And then after we worked at Tomato Fest, we went out, like, did a little bar hopping just to see what was there. And I was like, this has got to be like mini Austin, Texas, or something.
It's got to be something.
Like, and I was like, but there ain't no way. And like, as I carried on with this podcast and I was talking to people, is like Nashville used to be the Mecca. Now I think it's somewhat centered like between Nashville and Austin. Like, I think those two kind of fight it. And like, the way the music is going right now, it's like, it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, you'll have like these little blimps just pop up on social media, like just from anywhere. I mean, just think about that. And where'd he go? I haven't heard from him in a while, that Oliver Anthony character.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's doing stadiums right now.
Is he?
Yeah. Off of one song.
Yeah.
I mean, more power, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if I wrote a song that good and it did that good, I'd play stadiums, too.
Yeah.
But last thing I saw of him, saw it on TikTok. He was in Australia playing some big thing. And all these Aussies are singing along with him. Like, you don't even know what the American government's like. What are you singing about?
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah. I'm not hating on the guy. It was just out of nowhere.
For a guy to have one song to blow up and, like, no album, anything, and just all of a sudden be doing stadiums, that makes you feel like less of an artist.
Yeah, right, I mean, he went on Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, read the Bible. You know,
that's great.
You know, respect on that.
Yeah, I respect him for that alone.
And, but yeah, it's like, I think that's the beauty of like the TikTok or all these social medias is like, there is a chance for just literally anybody. Like,
man, don't get me started on TikTok.
I don't have one. I'm not on it. I'm not with it.
I can get
but
on there.
But I am not for like with American politics, I'm not for the ban of TikTok.
Oh no, I'm not either.
Of like, when you talk about children, parent discretion. When it comes to adult, like, there is a such thing as doom scrolling. And it is so easy. That algorithm will just suck you right in.
I don't know what they're getting at with TikTok stealing information. Because I'll be on there. I was playing PlayStation. I was playing a NASCAR game. I think I'm about to get another one of those, too.
Go ahead.
I was playing a NASCAR game on TikTok. I was like, man, I thought to myself, I would love to have a steering wheel, so I'm not just using this controller to steer.
Yeah.
And it was Facebook or Instagram. I get on one of them, and the first ad I get is for a steering wheel. I didn't say it out loud. I just thought about it. And I'm like, TikTok ain't never done this. They just send me ads about dental care or something like that.
Right.
I'm like,
Are you saying I got bad teeth?
I guess. The problem with TikTok now is every other TikTok is a TikTok shop ad.
Yeah.
Every other one. And so I'm just sitting there. And not to mention, every other one has got that daggum Beyonce country song in it. So that's double just scrolling by.
Yeah, you just double swipes. Yeah, it's wild, dude.
But my thing with TikTok is I can get on there and sing my heart out, put real work into making a video, and get 100, 200 views. Mm-hmm. But I did one trend, and I got 2 million off of a Keith Whitley song. In the old truck I used to drive.
How did you feel about that, though? Did you feel like you were giving a little bit of yourself away? Like that wasn't really you?
The TikTok was me itself because I drove a 1985 GMC Sierra.
Okay.
And so the running joke between anybody that rides in it is anytime we stop at a gas station, some old man is going to ask to buy it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And so it was the song was Miami, Miami by Keith Whitley. And it was like, and I pulled in. It was like me stopping at any Southern gas station. And then the next one was an old man in a truck. He said, you want to sell that truck, son? And it got 2 million views.
Mm-hmm.
But every TikTok I've posted since then.
Nothing.
Like, it'll get 20, 30 likes. And then that video will start getting likes again. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what's the point of this? I released this two years ago.
Yeah.
I don't get how it works. But maybe I should do more research on that.
Yeah, remains to be seen. Like, I don't have TikTok. I don't have the app. Like, my friend's podcast that I'm on, Man Up with Jake Reeves, we just hit 100K on TikTok, followers or whatever.
Man, that podcast do so good on TikTok.
Hoot and holler. Yeah, it's great. And, like, he shared that with a group today, and I was like, you know, congrats, and I'm glad to be here, but I don't know what that means. It doesn't mean anything to me. No. But I'm not there.
I mean, you can have 100K on TikTok and only get 100 views. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like, I don't know the metric. Like, man, I've had a YouTube channel for 10 years, and, like, some of my videos I've got thousands of views, mm-hmm. and some of my videos I've got 25. And the video that I've got 25 views on, that's what I wanted thousands of views on.
Yeah, that's what you put the most work into. Like, when I sit down, what I do is I'll just, any other quote-unquote country artist on TikTok will sit down and record themselves singing with their phone and post it. And so But when I do that, I'm so picky about how I sound. Like if I'm a smidget flat on a 16th
scratch note, it, redo it all.
I will redo the whole video. And so me doing one TikTok usually takes about an hour because it takes me that long to like a take that I've. And then I'll do a lot of takes and I'll go back and listen to one and I'll pick the one I did 45 minutes ago.
You and me
are
one and the same, brother. It's so hard on yourself.
But, huh? And that my producer gets on me for that all the time.
Oh, yeah. But you don't get to do that on stage, do you, brother?
No, but I have the best producer, man. His name's Ben Miller.
Hey, when you were first getting started, like getting up on stage and playing, like, did you ever mess up and stop and try to go get back what you had, or would you always just carry forward?
I was in choir all through middle school, high school.
So you knew
and
better.
And I knew you just keep going.
It's time. Like, you can't get time back.
Especially if you're an opener or something, you only got 45 minutes.
Yeah, you better get yours and get it now. Yeah.
I might have done it one time, and that was when I think we started in the wrong key or something. And I was like, well, I can't sing it in this key.
Yeah, so well, we got to go.
But if I, dude, I had a girl ask me the other day, when artists hold the microphone to the crowd, is that because they forgot the words? I was like, that's why I do it. I got a song. We play Arkansas by Chris Stapleton, and I have never remembered the second verse of that song ever since we played it.
Yeah.
And every time it's just a joke with the guys that are playing with me, I'm like, well, I forgot it again. And I'll listen to it 60 times before the show, and I still forget that verse. But, I mean, that's – people ask me, how do you remember all them songs? I'm like, well, I've been doing most of them for 4 years now. Yeah. Muscle memory. But
a little practice.
Yeah. I get to sit there and have them in a Spotify playlist.
Tell me a little about the road, man. Where all have you gone with your music?
I'm trying to go. What I've found is booking is difficult when you don't have over a million Spotify streams.
You know Logan Hogue?
Good buddies with Logan Hogue.
Yeah.
He's actually, shout out April 13th, Rick's Cafe. Logan Hogue will be opening for me for that show. Me and Logan are good buddies. But, I mean, I'm at a point where I'm texting, emailing, getting numbers from other music buddies trying to book these places, and I just get nothing back. It's like trying to talk to a girl these days. You just get ghosted.
Well, yeah. And on top of that is what we found, man, like about 2 years ago, we were, and I'm totally against this, and it was totally wild for me to be in the first place. I was playing bass in a jam band. I am not a deadhead. And I don't particularly care for that kind of music. It draws a lot of people in. A lot of people like it.
A lot of musicians like that stuff.
Yeah. And, like, I don't have anything against it. It's just not for me. But I played it because it paid really well. Yeah. And I remember, like, we were catching a lot of steam, picking up a lot of following. We were playing some fairly we picked up some coastal shows. Like, we were playing, like, Biloxi, Gulf Shores, and, like, Pensacola. And we were all over the place. I thought, man, I was like, we're killing, dude. I thought, yeah, this is great. We should start writing original material.
Mm-hmm.
And it immediately fell apart after that. And a lot of that was like when I started looking at what these bigger places were asking for, they were asking for EPKs, electronic press kits, which we had.
Yeah.
We were slowly building that up. But then the next roadblock that we ran into, how many Spotify followers do you have?
Oh my gosh. Makes me so mad. How do you expect me to get Spotify followers if I'm not playing live?
Yeah.
Like, it don't just happen on a whim.
It's almost like whether you're exiting high school and going for a job, or like maybe you just graduated college.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
Get an 11% rebate at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust custom 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 spray patterns with a twist of the dial. It protects indoor and outdoor metal and wood projects for long-lasting results and is available in more than 40 colors. Get started in your painting project at Menards, number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
And you're going for a job and they're looking for previous work experience. Yep. It's like, I've been in school this whole time. Where would I get it?
Yeah, an entry-level job.
Yeah.
With requesting 20 years of experience.
It's like, you understand that's what... No, they don't. And like, you're almost like setting that up against everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so, I mean, who plays here? Because, I mean, I've looked at who's played here. It ain't what you're asking for.
Oh, yeah. And I've gone, I went to, I don't remember what I was doing. I was in Tuscaloosa for some reason with a couple of my friends. We just drove by Rhythm and Brews down there.
Oh.
And the band playing there, I didn't know that. Most of the people, if I'm somewhere else besides here, it's because I know the person playing.
Mm.
I didn't know these guys. We were just hanging out for a little bit. And they were not good. And I'm like, I've been trying to get in this place for years and I ain't never heard nothing back, but these guys are up there. I'm not, it takes so much courage to get up and on the stage in front of people.
Mm.
But that's how I look at country music right now. You got all these guys that are using so much auto-tune on their songs.
I should have worn my Pop Country as Proposer's hat.
Oh dude, I wore a Pop Country Sucks at Rick's a couple months ago on stage.
Oh, you feel me on that? And I think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah,
the reason they got in was they were playing to the crowd. They were playing, yep, those pop country songs.
I think it was, I mean, Tuscaloosa is half country, half like 2000.
I'll tell you a little story about Rounders.
Oh, Lord.
I had a buddy of mine. He was in Tottwell Rounders. He got accepted. You ever heard of this? They handed him what songs he was going
to
play.
Oh, dude. I got a bone to pick with the Hangout. Did that to me.
Oh, yeah?
I screenshotted all the emails, but I got the contact from somebody. I emailed them, and I was like, hey, I'd love to play down there. You know, I've been there when I was a kid and stuff like that. And she sent me back, like, what to wear. She said, only fast-paced, upbeat songs, no slow songs. And I'm like, you want me to play 120 BPM songs for 3 hours?
Oh, damn.
Like, not even Tennessee Whiskey. Like, I can't play Tennessee Whiskey. They said, we don't require you to have a band uniform, but don't look like part of the crowd on the stage or something like that.
Yeah.
And I emailed her back, and I was like, I don't think I agree to any of that.
Yeah, like, well, I have, shout out to you for having a principle.
Oh, and they said no originals, too. And I'm like, I'm trying to promote myself. Like, I don't... I want to play my own stuff for people here.
You know, and that's one thing, like, and I'm happy to have you on the show, man, and, like, Munson Brothers, and there's a lot of the Blue Canoe in Tupelo.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
There's a lot of great venues in this state and in the Standard Deluxe outside of Auburn, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
They do a great job. There's a lot of great venues in small pockets all over these twin states here, mm-hmm, Mississippi and Alabama, that really believe in original music.
Oh.
And it takes...
I mean, Rick does too, though.
Rick does too.
I mean, I would
Rick
not
does too.
Have a music career if it wasn't for Rick.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, and that's why I opened, like, up with, like,
yeah, we're
talking about that, because it takes people like that, because, man, it's like, how did anybody get anywhere when you were asking me to dress a certain way and to,
exactly,
play a certain BPM?
That's not how Led Zeppelin did it.
Like, no.
What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I don't... That's my thing. I see all these people, they use a bunch of auto-tune, and they play live, and they can't hit the notes. And I'm not trying to dig anybody. I'm not going to say any names, because I have much respect for anybody in music, because I know how hard it is to get up and do that.
It's hard to get on stage.
But that's I get on stage and I'm like, I'm not going to be anybody but myself. Like, I'm not going to try to be somebody else. And that's what I see that happen a lot. People get up there and they, I mean, the big thing right now is to be trashy. You know, they want to get up there and break down a green room and break speakers and whatnot. And that's just, I was raised, leave it better than you found it, you know?
Amen.
And I get up there and I'm being the man that my mom and dad raised. Like, I'm not trying to be anybody else other than that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I respect about myself too. Finally, I've...
Well, you got a little self-respect then, you know?
I hope.
Praise God for that, you know?
Self-esteem, self-respect, yeah.
Oh, I mean, self-esteem is going to be at an all-time low at all times.
Overrated.
But yeah, let's step back a little bit, like, to from the State Theater and Rick's Outside to now and writing more songs and continuing to find who you are as a musician, man. Like, take me up to today, like, just with songwriting and just how you define who you are as a player.
Oh, that's a tough one. It took me a long time to figure out what my sound was. And I think my drummer for this, really, Hayden Wires. He's from
Hope. Shout out, dude!
Hell yeah! Shouting out everybody today.
Good dude. I know that dude.
He's a great guy.
Vicariously, by the way.
One of my best friends. And he was a metal drummer, and my drummer that I had before was getting married, and he didn't think he could do all of it while getting married and starting a family and all that, and I understood that. So I had a gig at Steel's Dive in Tupelo.
Cool place.
And I needed a drummer for that and a guitarist, because Isaiah was going on tour as a guitar tech or a stage tech with Toby Mac and all of them. I know he told you about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found a guitarist, and then my bass player at the time somehow knew Hayden, so we went up there, and he hadn't been playing drums long, but all he'd ever played was metal. And so I was like, we got to find a happy medium here. So first show, try to do all country. And he's a great drummer, but he's not a country drummer.
I mean, he's used to two pedals.
Or he wasn't at the time.
He's used to two pedals.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah.
He's going ham.
He is. And so I started being like, let me throw in a rock song here. And I started playing it, and I'm like, I'm sweating because I'm moving so much. And I'm like, this is fun. And now half of my set list is rock. And I realized, and people have told me, like my stepmom has told me, like, you have a voice to do this country rock thing.
Yeah.
And so the last song I released, Slow Me Down, if I released that 10 years ago, it would have been considered a rock song. Because that's the way things were. But now it's considered partially country.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I have twang, I guess. But I mean, we do a breakdown in Hicktown by Jason Aldean, and that's he opened my eyes to all that. I didn't know any of that worked. And of course I listen to metal. Like, I don't, if I'm driving around, I rarely listen to country, which is bewildering to a lot of people.
I don't find that weird at all, man. Like I like to I'm wary about what I put in my ears, because I don't want it to affect my sound.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's your approach, but like, if there is something close to what I'm doing, I want it away from me because it might influence.
Yeah.
And so, like, different genres and different things is good, because that invites new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But like, if I have something very close to like my sound or what I'm doing, that's kind of a detriment to me.
I can understand that. I mean, I remember I was at Thanksgiving at my dad's house, and I was talking to my stepsister's fiance, and we're talking about rock music because he's a drummer, and I started playing him some of the stuff I listened to. I think I played like This Fire by Killswitch Engage or something like
that.
Hell
yeah, dude.
And my dad was like, you listen to that crap? I was like, yeah.
As a matter of fact, I do.
That's what that's the kind of music that gets me going.
Like, yeah.
I love old country, but if I'm driving around in my truck, I am listening to metal 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
And people that get in my truck hate that. Especially if I'm going on a date or something, I got to make a whole new playlist of like country songs that she would like and stuff like that. It's like I can't scare her off on the first date with my head banging.
Yeah,
but that's why I started playing so much rock. I mean, we open with Black Sabbath now. We play War Pigs to open our show.
That's great. Which is
bewildering to people. Because they see me come out, jeans, boots, trucker hat, and then I start playing Black Sabbath. But it's fun.
That's cool, man. Where do we go from here? Like, what's next? What's coming up for you?
I just recorded a new song. I shouted him out earlier, my producer, Ben Miller, greatest guy on earth. Like, I've never met someone that off the bat I knew that I could trust in the music industry.
That's hard.
It is. And
so many people won't take advantage of you.
He believes in me like my parents believe in me. And it's just awesome to have someone like that doing your music. And went up there, wrote a song called Prayer for a Woman. It's about, I think, my high school girlfriend cheated on me or something. And my dad was like, well, I'm going to pray you up a woman. And then it took me 5 or 6 years to start doing that for myself.
Yeah.
And so I wrote a song about it. And went up there and built it from the ground up with him. And I don't know when it's going to come out. It's not done yet.
Hey, but when is the song finished?
When is it?
Yeah. When is the song finished?
When it's never finished, really.
I like that.
You always build on it.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people will be like, well, I knew it when it was finished when I walked out of the bedroom, or I knew it was finished when it was recorded. I knew it was finished when I played it in front of a live audience. And then there are some people who's like, well, a song is living and breathing. And
yep.
Like, yeah, I don't think it ever is. It. Someone else may pick it up. Someone else may cover it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like that.
When I sit there and write, it either takes me 15 minutes or 15 months.
Yeah, you like, get that lightning in the bottle, no, that 15 minutes, yeah, where you can't write stuff down fast enough.
I released a song called Reggae Against Hard Times, literally wrote it in 15
Probably
minutes.
Probably a great song, too, ain't it?
It's okay. It's long. It's like a 6-minute song.
Really?
I don't know what I have. And Prayer for a Woman's like 5.5 minutes. I don't know what it is with me and writing long songs. But when I was sitting there for Reggae Against Hard Times, I woke up. I'd been out the night before. It was like a Saturday morning, and my head was killing me. And so I picked up a guitar, and I said, I woke up this morning with a pounding head, and it's raining outside. Mm-hmm. And then it just kept going. Best chorus I've ever written.
Hell yeah,
and,
dude.
But when I put exactly what I'm feeling in a moment into a song, that song has no end. Like, every time I play it, it means more to me. Because, you know, the whole playing in bar things is weird, because I mean, I grew up playing in church.
Yeah.
And you know, you were taught not to drink, not to do any of that, especially in a Southern Baptist church. And
amen.
But before every show, I get my band together. I said, look, I don't know what y'all believe. I'm not forcing anything on you, especially if I've hired people out. I said, but I like to pray before my shows. No matter where I'm playing, if I'm playing at Rick's or if I'm playing some dive bar somewhere else, I said, because there's someone out there that you can have a positive effect on. They're, like, you never know walking in what somebody is going through.
There's a reason why they're there.
Yeah.
And it may not be you.
Yep. And you never know how you're going to affect somebody. Somebody could be contemplating hurting themselves.
Sure.
Walking into that bar and they hear a song you play. And they decide against
it. That's why I like Isaiah's song, Samantha.
Yeah, that's a great song.
And that is a great song. He shared that, and I've seen him play that song, and I have seen people break down.
Yep.
And I've also seen people walk away because it was hitting them too hard.
You just never know, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't assume anything that anybody's going through. Like, you can't assume everybody's there just because they want to have a good time with their friends.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do is I get there and I pray and I said, let us affect somebody in a positive way tonight, even though we're playing in a bar, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not about where you're playing. It's about the message you're getting across.
Well, and like you said, I mean, with your raising, it's like whether it's with this craze of ripping a green room up and you come from the same background that I am, is like I want to leave a place better than what I found.
Mm-hmm. Whether that's McDonald's or Madison Square Garden. That's just how I was raised.
And I think, like, most of the bands that we adore and we love, I think we often forget AC/DC to go to that. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
It definitely is.
And we begin to feel that. Well, brother, tell me a little bit about outside of music. What are you into?
I'm a big gamer. I play with my friends on the PlayStation almost every night. Because, I mean, I live here, and they live back home, so that's the only way I really get to talk to them.
Way to connect with them.
And so we get on there anytime between 5 o'clock and 2 in the morning and just get on there and talk and play games.
You ever get to go play back home?
I've played Birmingham quite a few times.
What's that like?
That is the first time I've ever had a crowd sing one of my songs back to me. And that was like as much of an I made it moment as it could be.
Hell yeah.
Because I was playing Down in Birmingham, one of my songs in Birmingham. And I get to the chorus and I see people singing along. I'm like, maybe this will work. Maybe I should try it.
It's kind of Back to That Girl, like point the mic.
Something like that. And I knew a lot of the people there. But I get to the last part of it, Down in Birmingham. And I get there, I said, sing it. And they sang it back, like, perfect.
Man, how'd that feel?
And I looked at Isaiah, and I did like that, because he was playing with me at the time. And I went home so ecstatic. I couldn't sleep because I was so excited over that happening.
Yeah, that's cool.
And now, I mean, last show at Rick's, I played a song with a full band that I'd never done before. A song I wrote called Women in 16 Me, and there was a guitar part in it. Uh-huh. And before we played it, I taught the audience how to sing the guitar part. And so every time in an interlude, they would sing the guitar part. And that was like, that was awesome. My friends were in the front row, and one of them goes, I almost cried when you did that. Like, but that you have, there's all-time highs and all-time lows, but the highs are worth the lows.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Way, way worth it.
Well, brother, I got 3 more questions, and we'll walk out of the door.
Mm-hmm.
Question 1, for those listening, if they wanted to follow and your story on social media, or if they wanted to be involved there with your music, where would they go?
If TikTok's not banned, I post on TikTok quite a bit. But my TikTok and Instagram are the same name. It's the_Caleb_Shirley. There's a story that stems from that, too. Had a buddy named Caleb growing up, and his granddad would go, oh, look, it's the Caleb Shirley, to differentiate. Because I almost changed my Instagram name because I'm like, this makes me seem egotistical, but I kept it the same because of that. So that's where that stems from. But those are the main two I really use. I use Facebook, but
yeah.
Facebook's for the old ladies at church to keep in touch with me. You know, mm-hmm. But TikTok and Instagram are my main two.
And what about your music if they want to hear it? Is it available?
I'm on everything.
Apple, Spotify, Amazon.
I go on DistroKid and I hit all stores. Right, so on. Even ones that I don't know exist, I'm on somehow.
So just look up Caleb Shirley on their favorite music app and they'll find you.
I'm working on a bunch of Spotify stuff right now, trying to make it look pretty. Because Spotify is the most aesthetically pleasing music app ever.
Yes, it is.
So I'm trying to get them little videos that they put when you're playing the song and stuff like that. I'm trying to do all that, but all the major ones I'm on for sure.
Question 2 is, man, if you could hop on a plane or get in your truck right now and go anywhere in the world, where would you go?
Oh man, that's a good one. Probably home.
I like that.
I miss my family and my buddies. But my favorite place in the world It's Talladega Super Speedway.
Hell yeah. Road Tide, baby. That's, you know what? You and I should do this together. Like this might be the mucus that bonds us. Is you know, there's a charity that they do there. Is like we could pick whatever vehicle we wanted as long as it'll get over the incline. But once a year, they do a donation out there. You can pay, and you can drive whatever vehicle you want around Talladega. We should do that together.
I
want to
do that forever, man.
I'll get up in a chicken costume.
I'll rent a Studebaker just for that.
Hell yeah.
But, dude, we're going off on a tangent. I'm sorry.
Oh, let's go.
Met Richard Petty.
Really?
Back in May.
How?
We, it was a late
That's
birthday present.
That's what these
present.
Questions are for, by the way.
Oh, yeah. But... late birthday present from my dad. Me, him, and my stepmom went up to North Carolina. My dad's a big NASCAR guy, too.
Oh, yeah. You grew up watching it with you, okay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Went every year to Talladega from the time I was 5 till I was 18. And then I went back for the first time since then last year.
How was it?
And it was just magical. I'm like,
ain't nothing quite like Talladega.
I thought I was a kid again.
Yeah.
But so we go up there, we go to the NASCAR Hall of Fame, see all that stuff. I'm actually 10th on the leaderboard all time for the racing simulator. So I took a picture of it. I have proof.
Okay.
But I'm like, sign me up, Richard Childress. But so we go up there. We go to Richard Childress Museum, see all of – we're big Dale Earnhardt people, see all of Dale Earnhardt's cars.
Mm-hmm.
And drove up to Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, which is closed now. And saw his old car and his 7 Winston Cup championships just through the window. And it was, like, eerie. That's the only way I can describe it, because nobody's there. And then went to Junior Motorsports, got a bunch of stuff there, spent way too much money, because I'm a big Dale Jr. fan, obviously. And then we went to – might have been our last day. We also went to the where Andy Griffith was based off of, Andy Griffith's hometown, which was awesome. At the Real Diner. That's Mount Airy, North Carolina.
Okay.
And went to Pilot Mountain, all this stuff. It was awesome. Because that's what I grew up on, too. NASCAR, Dukes of Hazzard, Andy Griffith.
Right.
Those were our shows. And but I think it was our last day, next to last or something, we went to Richard Petty's museum. And we're sitting there watching a video about when Adam Petty passed away in an accident. And we heard a guy talking to a guy behind us, and he goes, yeah, that was a sad day for all of us. And we turn around, and my dad's like, that's Dale Inman, Richard Petty's crew chief for, you know, his championships. And so we talked about Dale Inman, talked about BRR Raceway that used to be in Inslee in Birmingham, and sat there and talked to him for 5 or 10 minutes.
Oh, what'd that mean to the old man?
Oh, my gosh, dude. He was like a kid in a candy store. And but we're getting ready to leave, and Richard actually signs everything in his gift shop and sells it for normal price.
Uh-huh.
And so I had this STP hat that it was in a box from the 80s that he just found and put on the shelf and signed it to sell.
Talking about that powder blue and that red?
It was navy, but it's so cool. And I have a 200th win plaque that's signed, too.
Oh, yeah.
And so I got all this stuff in my hands, and I don't know if it's somebody related to him that runs the stand where you pay to enter. And she's like, hey, the king's outside. I said, the who? Dropped everything. I was like, I don't want him to think I'm stealing it. Threw it on the ground, run out there. And I'm telling you, he has this chaw in that's so big of skull straight. His lips poking out 10 inches from his face, and he's talking to me in a little trail of spit, like, lands on my shirt. I'm like, I'm never washing this shit.
Yeah.
But I shake his hand, all that. We take a picture. And he just shows up to meet fans at his museum all the time.
Oh, what a guy.
And it was the coolest experience. And so after that, I started, because I'd stopped watching NASCAR for a while. I didn't like the next gen stuff.
I didn't either. That's really, and I'm coming back now.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Because the racing's getting better.
It is getting a lot better.
And so after that, I started watching NASCAR again. And I mean, I was a month out because we went to Talladega in April. Mm-hmm. Went there in May. So I was kind of educated on what was going on. It was just so freaking cool. That whole trip, like seeing the actual chassis that Dale Earnhardt raced, that I mean, I was born after Dale Earnhardt died. I was born in November of 01.
Sounds like a song to me.
Yeah. That's a good one. But, I mean, I sit there for hours and watch old Dale Earnhardt wins on YouTube.
I'll never forget. I was young, man. Bad young.
Yeah.
And my dad watched NASCAR every Sunday. And I will never forget that wreck.
Oh, I'm almost glad I wasn't alive to see that.
And it wasn't the fact. I didn't see it happen live. All I remember is my dad's reaction.
Yeah.
And how it shook him. And he was just in disbelief. It's like, no way. There's no way.
Oh, and you look at it from today's terms, and it's not bad at all.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, he didn't wear a Hans device.
He was.
And he wore the open face helmet. And so, I mean, he was destined to have something bad happen.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, it was last year, I think, Ryan Blaney hit the wall at Daytona almost exactly the same
mm-hmm.
way. And everybody that was Dale Earnhardt fans was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But he came out fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's almost a good thing that it happened the way it did, because we probably would have lost so many more NASCAR drivers because of lack of safety.
Mm-hmm.
So
it brought on a new era, like mm-hmm. it or not. One last question.
All right.
If you was going to share a song with us tonight, what song would it be, and what's the story behind it?
Oh, I think I'll play Prayer for a Woman. Because it's going to come out in the next month or two. And like I said, my high school girlfriend did me wrong or something. And my dad was like, I'm going to pray you up a woman. And so, been in college for however long now. I haven't dated anybody in 3 years now. And I'm just kind of waiting for the right thing, you know. And I'd never tried praying for a woman. And so, just the woman that God has for you. And so I started trying to do that. And then the best way I knew how to do it was write a song about it. So I went up and recorded it 2 weeks ago, built it from the ground up with old Ben Miller, and it's going to be pretty. But it's very high. I might have a few voice cracks.
Well, give me a little, we're going to have a little lo-fi version of it here.
It's
just Caleb and his guitar.
It's a little high, but we can try it.
Right on.
One of the best. My name is Caleb Shirley, and this is Prayer for a Woman. Lord, if you're listening, just want to talk to you. I know it's been a lesson, everything that I've been through. I guess I'm getting weary, wandering down this road. I don't know if I'm ready. When I am, just let me. Got someone out there for me right now. This is my prayer till she comes around. Keep her safe, keep her strong till I'm put your hand over her heart. 'Cause living in this world can be so hard. Give me strength so I can be a man
shield on. This is my prayer for one. Don't wanna rush your timing, but I just had to ask. I'm about done trying. So I just put it in your hands. Give her everything she needs until I can provide. Lord, just one more thing. Promise that you'll help me when it's time. I know you got her out there for me. So till then, I'll just let it be. Keep her safe. Put your hand over her heart. 'Cause living in this world can be so hard. Give me strength so I can be a man she wants. This is my prayer.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.